All right, well, welcome to our discussion of Sukkot. Will the real Sukkot please stand up? We know that most holidays have a particular mitzvah you associate with it. So, you know, Pesach will be the classic. Pesach is matzah. That's what it's all about. There are other mitzvot, but you can't separate it from the matzot. It's even called Chag HaMatzot, a holiday of matzot. The shofar is the association with Rosh Hashanah. There's no question about it. When it comes to Sukkot, we've got two candidates. We've got the lulav, and we also have the sukkah. So I want to understand which one is it, which one expresses the essential nature of the holiday itself. So let's take a look and try to figure it out. If we ask, is it a holiday of lulav or a holiday of a sukkah? Of course, it's called Sukkot, so that's pretty easy. Easy question there, but nonetheless, I'd like to give it a shot that maybe it's that the lulav is what it's all about. And what difference does it make if it was a holiday of Sukkot? Is that different than what a holiday of lulav would mean or represent? So, for instance, I once wrote in a promotional brochure that Sukkot without a lulav is like a day without sunshine, or Pesach without matzah. So I was trying to encourage people to buy a lulav. And then, you know, later years, I reconsidered and I said, hey, wait a second. Is that true? If Sukkot doesn't have a lulav, is it not Sukkot? I mean, you still have your sukkah. You know, if you didn't have matzah on Pesach, that really wouldn't be Pesach. But if you didn't have a lulav, would that do it? So we're trying to understand, is it true that Sukkot without a lulav is like a day without sunshine or Pesach without matzah? Or is sukkah really the essence of Sukkot? And if it is, then what does it represent? What does it mean? What does this holiday mean? And why are there two different symbols? And are they different at all? Okay. So if we look at the very first time, we've done this for different holidays throughout the holiday season. You know, we want to look at the holidays as they're presented each time. So at Mount Sinai, Parshat Mishpatim, right there, as he's making the ceremony of giving them the Ten Commandments and giving them some of the Mishpatim, some of the early laws, civil laws, and making a covenant about them. He says that there's a Chag HaGatzir. There's a harvest festival, the first fruits. That's Shavuot. We're not talking about that. The Chag HaTzif, B'Tzed HaShana, Os B'chad Masach HaMinasim. There's a holiday of ingathering of the fruit. When you gather your produce, the results of your work from the field. So it says when you gather your fruits. So that very first formulation, is it more of a sukkah formulation or more of a lulav formulation? The Chag HaAsif, the holiday of ingathering. Which one do you associate more with the ingathering festival? The lulav or the sukkah? I'll open that up for answers. What do you think? If it's a holiday of asif, of a harvest, of gathering stuff, you know, produce, whatever it is, which one do you associate more with that, the lulav or the sukkah, and why?
I would say lulav because it's a plant, like a gathering of plant.
Good. How can you make an argument for the schach, for the sukkah?
Because it's covered with a plant.
Right. So it could sort of go either way. So it's not clear. You know, it doesn't, in the very first presentation of Sukkot, it doesn't call it Sukkot. So it calls it the holiday of gathering, which we'll see later. Sefer Rabbati points out that Aristotle pointed out that there were always holidays of gathering. The Jews didn't have to invent it. In fact, some suggest that's why it says, I think, Kabbalah, someone says that's why it's called the holiday of gathering. You just told me about it. If I said to you, next Tuesday is the holiday of Joel Finkelstein, what do you mean the holiday? You just made it up. I said, no. It's an old holiday. They always had the Joel Finkelstein holiday, or they always had the gathering holiday. So here it's just saying, you know, the pagan holiday harvest gathering? That's one of the gatherings and one of the holidays, and you have to go to God, go to the temple on that day. But in any event, if it's about a harvest, so which one is it about, a lulav or a sukkah? And maybe you're arguing it's both. It doesn't make a difference. So let's take a look. For this, we look in Nehemiah. Nehemiah is one of the only places that discusses somebody actually making Sukkot. And it says that, you know, when the Jews were exiled, 586 BC, they came back about 100 years later with Nehemiah, and they found in the Torah that it says you should have Sukkot. They were so ignorant, they didn't even know that. So, oh, you're supposed to have Sukkot? Great. So they told everybody in all their cities and in Jerusalem, go out to the mountain and bring branches of olives and branches of the olive tree, I don't know, and the hadas, that's the hadasim, the myrtle branches, and branches of dates, that's like palm trees, ale etz avot, and thick branches, maybe that's the myrtle, to make Sukkot just like it says. So the question is this a description of the four species? Let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, I don't know, it's 5 different things. Is this a description of lulav, or is this a description of sukkah? And there is an opinion in the Talmud that the schach should be done, the covering of the sukkah should be with the four species. And maybe this is how the people at that time were thinking. But again, there's sort of an ambiguity. Which one is it? If it's a time to gather different stuff together, then what is it? Of course, if you want to have a holiday of gathering, the question is, how do you celebrate it? If I was having a holiday of gathering, I was a grape farmer. So I'm not sure I want to celebrate with grapes. I mean, on Shavuos, I might do that. I might bring the first grapes after Shavuos or sometime around then to the temple. But generally, I don't want to decorate my house with grapes. I want to eat the grapes. I want to sell the grapes. So a lulav is interesting because it's sort of a celebration of the harvest, but you're not really giving up on any of the harvest. I mean, and that's not like you really wanted to have that etrog for lunch. I don't know, maybe once upon a time it was more edible. Talmud talks about people eating it after the holiday. But still, it's not particularly, it's beautiful on the outside, but I'm not sure it's so delectable on the inside. So, and also the schach, I'm not sure I want to hang pomegranates from my sukkah. I like pomegranates. I love pomegranates. I want to eat them. I want to drink the juice. I don't want to hang them and ruin them up sitting in the sun for 7 days. So it's an interesting question of what do you put up there? And what does it mean? How do you celebrate a harvest festival? Do you celebrate more with the schach, with just random leaves? You know, people have reefs. Sometimes they put up celebrating, I think, some kind of harvest. I have no idea. But like a reef is also just a bunch of branches. It's not the actual fruit, because it's hard to celebrate with actual fruit. So in any event, so we see there's some ambiguity as to whether it's the schach or whether it's the branches. So maybe they're sort of the same thing. Maybe you're supposed to put, olive. Maybe you're supposed to put the palm branches on top of your sukkah, in addition to shaking. But in any event, this is a very interesting challenge. So if we ask, what is the holiday of gathering? Is it more of the lulav or the sukkah? I don't know. It's hard to tell from the chem. And if you have to say for achinuch, why do you take lulav? Maybe if we understood why you took lulav, we could understand if it was related to the harvest or not. So he writes, well, it's a day of joy, because when you're gathering the fruits and to your house, everybody's very happy. And that's why it's called the holiday of gathering. So the Sefer Achinuch, who explains the 613 mitzvot, in explaining the lulav, says it's related to the Chag HaAsif. He answers our question. We wondered in this verse in Exodus 23, Chag HaAsif, the holiday of gathering, is that related to a lulav or a sukkah? There he is, the Sefer Achinuch. He says it relates to the lulav. So that's very interesting. And I have to check the Sefer Achinuch regarding the sukkah and whether what he said there. Maybe we'll do that after the class. Then we turn to the most important section, and that is the Leviticus 23. If you want to know anything about any Jewish holidays, you have to look at Leviticus 23. That's where all the holidays are listed, from Shabbat to Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkot, and Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur. It's all there. As a matter of fact, many of these holidays don't have much other mention other than right there. You have the list of sacrifices, and in Numbers 28, in Parshat Pinchas, and that gives you another list of holidays, but it's just mostly sacrifices, not so much about the holiday today. So Leviticus 23 is really the go-to place. So it says something very weird. It says, speak to the Jews, on the 15th day of the 7th month, that's Nisan, Iyar, Sivan, Tammuz, Av, Elul, Tishrei. So it's the 7th month. On the 15th day of this holiday, whatever that means, There's a Chag of Sukkot for 7 days to God. First day is a holy invocation. Doesn't do any work, certain type of work. 7 days you should bring offerings. On the eighth day, also a holy day, and you should bring sacrifices. It's a gathering. Don't do any work. These are the holidays. That's it. It listed Shabbat, Pesach, Shavuos, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. That's it. Those are the holidays for the sacrifices. Okay? So what did it not mention? Right? Nothing about the lulav, just Sukkot. But then there's the next verse. And by the way, but on the 15th day, when you gather the fruits, notice when you gather the fruits, you should make the produce, you should make a holiday for God, 7 days. First day is a Shabbaton, last day is a Shabbaton. It's a Shabbaton. It's a Shabbaton, meaning it's some kind of a holiday. And you should take on the first day fruits, beautiful fruits, which we understand to be an etrog, and palm branches, which we understand to be lulav, and afei tzavot, thick branches, which we understand to be hadasim, and the arvei nachal, the willow, because they grow in the rivers. And you should rejoice before God 7 days. On the first day, you should take it and rejoice 7 days. So we take it for 7 days or not? What's the story? It's hard to tell. It's hard to say. So is it a one-day holiday, or is he supposed to take lulav and etrog for 7 days or for 1 day? So we have to discuss that. But notice how it's an afterthought. We have, there's something called Sukkot, and it's a holiday of Sukkot. And Sukkot implies there's a sukkah. It doesn't say make a sukkah. That it says at the end. It says at the very end, you should make it 7 days, and you should dwell in the sukkah for 7 days. So you should remember that you were in the Sukkot when I took you out of Egypt. That's very confused. Verses says the holiday of Sukkot. What do you do on Sukkot? It doesn't say. Then it says, oh, by the way, but when you have the gathering, you should have a holiday. And you should take lulav when? On the first day. Or you should rejoice for 7 days. You should rejoice with lulav or just rejoice in general? It doesn't say. And then it says, you should make a holiday for 7 days and you should sit in the Sukkah. So it's like Sukkot, lulav, Sukkah. So you should remember that you were, that God put you in Sukkot when you went out of Egypt, whatever that means. So here, the lulav seems to come as an afterthought. It's not, it's sandwiched in the middle of a discussion of Sukkot, and it comes, but should also have a lulav. So it's very strange. Lulav seems to be secondary. If we had to vote now, we would say lulav is secondary. The Sukkah is the main thing.
And excuse me, it mentions the new fruit, and so I wonder this time of year what is the new fruit?
No. It doesn't say new fruit. It says the special fruit, the beautiful fruit.
Oh, so that could be like raspberries or anything.
No. The rabbis interpret that there's only one meaning to the beautiful fruit, and that is a lula, an etrog, the etrog. The rabbis insist on that. That the Rambam claims that this is a perushi Moshe Rabbeinu. That obviously this verse was here since Moses, and someone must have asked him, "What fruit is it?" And his answer was etrog. So that's what we believe. So it's not just any nice fruit. No, if you don't have an etrog and you want to take nice fruits, you can certainly celebrate the harvest festival with various nice fruits. That would be appropriate. But to say that this is the beautiful fruit that's in the Torah, that would be against rabbinic interpretation. In general, there's rabbinic interpretation, there's other interpretations. This is what the Rambam calls Pirushi Moshe Rabbeinu. This is a classic place where we claim, look, we're the Jews who go back, our ancestors go back to the very beginning. And this is what we've always taken. Of course, we have the problem with the verse in the Nechemiah that doesn't mention an etrog. But in any event, that's what we claim, that it goes way back. Okay, so, but it doesn't say new fruit, it says a beautiful fruit. Good. So, now, in order to understand whether the lulav is essential or not, we're going to go to an excursion about something, about another topic. Then we'll come back to it. We know that men wear tefillin every day, but not on Shabbat. Never catch a man wearing tefillin on Shabbat. Why? Because Shabbat is a sign. You don't get a Tefillin is a sign to remind men to keep their heads and their head straight. So that's why women are more straight. They don't need this kind of thing. But keep your mind focused. But on Shabbat, the Shabbat Ruma keeps you focused. It's no problem. What about Yom Tov? Yeah, also Yom Tov keeps you straight. You don't need it. What about Chol HaMoed? What about the intermediate days in between the beginning and the end of Sukkot, in the beginning and the end of Pesach? Do you wear tefillin then or not? Talmud never says explicitly what to do. It doesn't say. It says you can make tefillin. If you need it for yourself, you can make tefillin. Maybe that implies you need it during Pesach, during Sukkot. But it's not clear. It just doesn't say. It didn't say that it's excluded on Chol HaMoed, so maybe, therefore, you should wear tefillin on Chol HaMoed. Just not clear. So Sephardim generally don't. Mystics don't. Some mystics do. I don't know. And then Ashkenazim do. But we're in a Sephardic Shul, so we don't. It's a whole big tumult, a whole big discussion. Now, the Haggadah by Maimonides were the students of this very unusual rabbi, Rabbi Meir of Rothenburg, one of the major Ashkenazic rabbis, who mentored all the important people like the Rush or Zerua, and he landed out in jail because they had this exorbitant Jew tax that you're supposed to pay because you were a Jew. So he tried to escape, and they caught him, and they put him in a very nice dungeon some duke or something, put him in a dungeon there, and he taught from there. So his students wrote up his notes about Maimonides' Rambam. Maimonides has his book, and he has footnotes on the Marma. And he wrote, because of Rabbeinu Yehuda wrote, a French rabbi, the Re Haya Oso Hanich Tefillin, that Rabbi Yitzchak HaZaken, the great-grandson of Rashi, forbade wearing tefillin on the intermediate days, on the Chol HaMoed. Because, why? Because there is a sign. You have a symbol. The Pesach Matzos. On Pesach, you have matzah. You don't need a tefillin. The matzah will keep the man focused on the right thing. And on Sukkot, Sukkavilla. He claims that on Sukkot, something that reminds you of God is a sukkah and lulav. Now, it's strange that he mentions lulav because, as we'll see in a moment, the lulav is only taken on the first day. The only reason we take a lulav on any other day is to remember that in the temple, they rejoice for 7 days with a lulav in front of God. But we only take it one. The first day is the main day. So if you're on the third day of Sukkot, the lulav can't keep you straight because there is no lulav. The rabbis instituted the lulav. That's what's going to keep you straight. It's just a rabbinic law. From a Torah perspective, what keeps you straight? What keeps a man focused on third day of Sukkot, fourth day? It's the sukkah. But the Haggadah Maimonides said, no, also lulav. So he thinks that somehow the lulav still keeps you straight. Maybe because in the temple they had a lulav. So if you went to the temple, you would, as most Jews should and would in those days, in Sukkot, you go to the temple. So there they would shake a lulav for 7 days. So the lulav keeps you straight for 7 days. The Ravid was also from Provence, and he was from Provence, and he comments against the Rambam on many, many occasions. A lot of footnotes. And so the Rambam talks about that a stolen lulav is no good, but a stolen shofar is okay. And there was, no one's allowed to, you're not allowed to steal anything. But if someone did steal a shofar and they blew with it, or let's say you borrowed it without asking, let's say he's not so sinister to steal it, but he borrowed it without asking, what's that called? Stealing. So if you steal a lulav, you borrow a lulav without asking, and you blow it, so did you get the mitzvah? Do we say that's tainted? That's disgusting. We don't want a mitzvah like that. And that's what we say about a lulav. If you steal a lulav, then guess what? You don't get the mitzvah. Because God does, as it says in Micah, was it Malachi? You're going to bring me your worst lame animals? You think God wants this? I don't want this stuff. So God doesn't want our stolen lulavs. So what about a shofar? So the Rambam says, well, a shofar is different because, you see, you just get the mitzvah with the sound. The shofar is not important. It's just the sound. So you can get the mitzvah by the sound. The sound is, you know, disembodied. There's no body to it. Says the Ravid, even if it would be considered stolen, if you could say the sound is stolen, who cares? The Jerusalem Talmud says a more fundamental reason why a stolen shofar is not a problem. Because, again, it's a problem. You're not allowed to steal. but it's not a Rosh Hashanah problem, because the Torah says it should be a day of blast. No matter what, it has to be a day of blast. If it's not a day of blast, it ain't Rosh Hashanah. You gotta have a day of blast. If it's not a day of blast, it's not Rosh Hashanah. The idea of Rosh Hashanah, the name of Rosh Hashanah, is a day of blast. So you must have it. Even if it's stolen, it's still a day of blast. No matter what. So that's like a fundamental thing. But what about a lulav? Do we say that it's a day? Is that what it's called? Is it called Chag HaLulav? It's the holiday of lulav? I don't know that you have to have a lulav. Maybe a day of Sukkot without a lulav is not like a day without sunshine. It's still Sukkot, even without a lulav. And thanks to my son Tani for this one, Rabbi Yonasan of Lunil. Yonasan of Lunil is a wonderful rabbi from Provence and Lunil, and he was a very big fan of the Rambam when some people were criticizing him. Anyway, he's one of the great scholars on the Talmud, and we didn't always have his writings. Now we have more of his writings. Anyway, he comments on the Megillah. They're talking about Megillah, that, you know, if Purim falls on Friday, so then, you know, if you live in a small town, you can't get there on Friday, so you hear the Megillah on Thursday. And, you know, if it falls on Shabbat, then also you should read it on Thursday if you live in a small town. So he says, wait a second. Why is it that when it comes to some of the small towns and the big towns, we help you, if it falls on Shabbos, we make a special institution so you could read it on a different time. On a shofar and a lulav, when it falls on Shabbos, we say, tough luck. This year, on Shabbat, Rosh Hashanah, we said, tough luck, can't blow the shofar. On Sukkot, this coming Shabbat, we're not going to take lulav. But that's the main day. I just said the first day is the main day. It says in the Torah, you should take for yourself on the first day. Leviticus 23, you should take for yourself on the first day. So how could you cancel it? Why don't they do something about it? They got to do something. You can't not have a lulav in a shofar. What's going on? So he says, look, the answer is, look, when it comes to Purim, rabbis interpret that it's not one day of Purim. You may have Purim, but there are days of Purim. And there are all these different days, so you can find a day that's not Shabbos to listen to the Megillah. Or because of the Bishumanisa, after all, you want to tell everybody about the miracle, we got to go all out, even if it falls on Shabbos. We'll read it before Shabbos. But lulav, if we don't shake a lulav, it's not the end of the world, because you'll still remember it's Sukkos, because you can sit in your sukkah. Now you can take this two ways. One is that simple reading. You have two mitzvos. One goes away, you still have something else. It's still a sign. You still have a holiday. Still feels like a nice holiday. Or I could say that sukkah and lulav, as we showed before, are really related to the harvest festival. If they're both related to the harvest festival, then who cares? You can have a lulav or you can have a shofar or a sukkah. It doesn't make a difference. As long as you have a sukkah, it's still the harvest festival. You don't need the lulav. That's another reading of the Rebbe Meal. And he says, shofar also, it's not always, you don't always have a shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Sometimes it's a zikron shua. Sometimes you just talk about shofar, like on Shabbos. So you can get away with a Rosh Hashanah without shofar. A Rosh Hashanah without shofar is not like a day without sunshine. It's a remembrance of shofar. There's something in the Torah called a remembrance. But if you don't have a lulav, if you don't have a lulav, you can still have Sukkot. So he's also arguing that the Sukkah is the essence of Sukkot and lulav is not. Also, it's all about timing. We mentioned that Mishnah says, in the beginning, lulav was taken 7 days in Beis HaMikdash, or maybe in Jerusalem. Rambam says it's in Jerusalem. Rashi says only in the Beis HaMikdash. And everywhere else, it's not Jerusalem or the Beis HaMikdash. It only taken 1 day. But when the temple was destroyed, like today, the temple is destroyed. So then Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the first rabbi after the temple was destroyed, he said, no, you should take the lulav for 7 days to remember the Beis HaMikdash. The reason we take a lulav for 7 days, the reason we'll take it, God willing, this Sunday, is to remember the Beis HaMikdash. Remember the Beis HaMikdash. So we say, wait a second, that means that a lulav fundamentally is only taken 1 day. So you can't argue that Sukkot without a lulav is like a day without sunshine, because technically once upon a time, if I was in Yaffa, if I was in Sipori, if I was in Be'er Sheva on Sukkot, I would take a lulav for one day. So Sukkot is not all about a lulav because there's only one day of it. But then we say, wait a second. What is the mitzvah of a lulav? Is the mitzvah of a lulav really 7 days? But some crazy people who live like in Memphis or something, they only take it one day. So nowadays, there's no temple, so we take it for 7 days. Or no. Really, the mitzvah is 7 days. And there's some crazy people out in Memphis, they only take it one day. In other words, which is the real mitzvah? Well, the real mitzvah of lulav, please stand up. Is it really the real mitzvah of the 7 days? And there's a weird dispensation for people who don't, Nebuch, don't live in Jerusalem. They have to take it just one day. Or no, the mitzvah is one day. This is a crazy thing for these strange people who live in Jerusalem. They have 7 days. Which one is it? So the Rambam, in his count of the mitzvahs, he says a mitzvah to rejoice 7 days. That's the mitzvah. But in other places, only one day. Where the Rambam formulates it here in his count of mitzvot, in his sefer mitzvot, is that the main mitzvah is a 7 days. And the other one, we're the losers who can only do it one day. The Rambam Hilchas Lulav, Rambam in his magnum opus in the Mishnah Torah, there he says, it's a mitzvah to be taken on the first day only, everywhere. Even on Shabbos, that's once upon a time. And only in the Mikdash, they take it for 7 days. So here he puts the 7 day thing as like a secondary thing. According to the Rambam in the counting of the mitzvot, a day without lulav is a day without sunshine, because every day in the real place, the Beis HaMikdash, the fundamental place where lulav is taken, it's every day. But according to the Rambam in the Tilchas Lulav, a day without a lulav is not a big deal, because the real mitzvah is only one day. And there's another mitzvah in Beis HaMikdash, they have 7 days, but who cares about it? So, one might look at it this way. There are other rabbis who count mitzvahs, like the Urayim, the Lezermin Mitz of Mainz from Germany. He says, lulav, God commanded us to take it one day if we don't live in Jerusalem. And if you live in the Holy Temple, if you're visiting the Holy Temple, 7 days. So it's one mitzvah. There's no main thing or something. It's two different things. So what would he say is a day without sunshine, is a day without a lulav, a day without sunshine? I don't know what he would say, but he certainly puts the two together. They're the same. According to the Rambam, the Rambam thought the main thing is 7 days. Then he thought the main thing is the one day. The Rambam says they're both the main thing. So from that perspective, there is, every day there's some lulav action. Depends where and when you live, whether you could actually partake of that action, but there's supposed to be some lulav action every day. So if we ask the question, what's the... is lulav essential to Sukkot? See, it's all about timing. It depends where you live and what time you live, what time period, whether there's a Beis HaMikdash. Okay. And then there's always a possibility that, we have these dichotomous questions. Is Sukkah is all about Sukkah? Lulav is all about the Sukkah. Lulav, Sukkah, lulav. You say, well, maybe it's really about both. So we ask the question, what difference does it make? What kind of class is this? Who cares if it's about lulav, sukkah, whatever, you do both, I don't know. So we have to understand, what is a lulav, what is a sukkah? So is Sukkot to remember the Exodus and the wandering? Or is Sukkot to remember the bounty of the land of Israel? Audience participation, who thinks which one represents the bounty of Israel? Which one represents the wandering?
The etrog would be the bounty, right?
Right. And the sukkah would be? Represents?
Well, it represents where they kept their animals and they were out in little huts and little shanty towns.
Where?
In Sukkot was the name of the town.
Oh, that's a possibility. There is a possibility. Shira mentioned the first town they went to when they left Egypt was Sukkot. So maybe this represents the first station of the, not of the cross, but of the travels of the Jews in the desert. The first station was Sukkot. That's possible. But the more simple meaning is that we lived in Sukkot throughout the desert, or that we had the clouds of glory wandered throughout the desert. So the Sukkah represents the wandering, and the Lulav represents celebration of the harvest in the land of Israel. Now, Rav Yoel ben Nun was a very clever Tanakh teacher at Yeshivat Har Tzion, or more precisely at the Tanakh school there, the Mechon Herzog. So he said, at Mount Sinai, back in Exodus chapter 23, they were standing on Mount Sinai. God's giving him the first laws after the Ten Commandments. And he's telling about the harvest festival. At that moment, what would he be telling them about? The wandering in the desert, a holiday for wandering in the desert, or a holiday for the bounty of the land of Israel? Audience participation.
Israel.
Why?
Because that was the hope. We don't want to look back at Egypt. We want to look forward to the hope and the blessings of Hashem.
Another, you're getting there. There's another reason it could not have talked about, Sukkot could not have represented the wanderings when they were standing at Mount Sinai. Why not?
They hadn't wandered yet?
Right. Now, they had gone for 50 days, right?
Yeah.
They had gone. And if it simply represents, if being in the desert simply represents that the Jews were guarded by the divine clouds when they left Egypt, that could be right away. But it's more likely that he's telling them, look, you're going to Israel. You're gonna have Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, and remember to visit God three times a year and come to the temple and show up and give thanks for your bounty. So in Exodus, it could be we were talking more about, it was more of a lulav kind of holiday.
Could it be a prophecy?
Sorry? It's a good question. Ask it again.
Could it have been a prophecy that we would have been wandering for a long time?
The only thing is, if it said sit in Sukkot, it's one thing. But notice, the first time it describes the holiday, it doesn't call it Sukkot. It just calls it a holiday of gathering. So we don't need to say that, right? If it said holiday of Sukkot, so we'd say, well, but they weren't in a sukkah yet. Well, they were. They when they went out of Egypt, they had the clouds of glory. They had to build something to live in, so they probably were in temporary Sukkot. Or as Suzanne mentioned, they temporarily camped out in the city of Sukkot in Egypt. So that was the first stop after they got out of Egypt. So, you know, we could have explained it, but it didn't mention Sukkot. It mentioned just a harvest. And in fact, there was no point of talking. The whole focus was, you're going to go to Israel and you're going to conquer the land and you're going to come to Jerusalem to gather together and remain one united nation under God three times a year, Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, and you'll celebrate the harvest at that time. So the lulav, let's see. So the lulav is more of the bounty thing. We thought of the lulav as sort of an afterthought. Well, maybe the lulav is actually the fundamental thing. That was the original idea of as a harvest festival. But the sukkah is more of the afterthought. The sukkah is actually the one that's the wandering thing. So this is a new idea from Yoel ben Nun. I don't know if I got it exactly right. I didn't have to look more carefully at what Ben Nun wrote, but based on what the suggestion he made, one might suggest that the lulav is more fundamental because the lulav is the original idea of more of a harvest festival, and the sukkah is an afterthought that comes later. In other words, it's an evolution within the Torah. We do find this, you're right, Diana, 100%, that God knows everything, so there's no question. But sometimes he does formulate the laws as you are. He doesn't say to you, oh, sit in a sukkah. Well, wink, wink, you're going to end up wandering for a long time, so you better start celebrating now. You know, that wouldn't be appropriate. He talks to them as if, oh, you're going to Israel. Let's have a harvest festival when you go to Israel, right? And it turns out, oh, surprise, surprise, the Jews had a sin. And then God says, oh, it's not going to, we're going to commemorate the wandering. But, and again, we're not sure, is it the wandering or is it just the fact that they went out of Egypt and they were protected by divine cloud? But sometimes there's an evolution. For instance, Shabbat. My distant cousin, Elchanan Adler, and other people have spoken about the idea that Shabbat evolves. First, there's the things that are told us to us at Mara when they got the man, and how we had to prepare things before Shabbat. Then you have later on mentions of fire. So some holidays are presented in sort of evolutionary fashion. Sometimes you have such a, it's a slightly radical idea, but it's somewhat clear in the Torah that some laws are presented differently as you go along. So in any event, so yeah, there's the, Diana, but you're correct to notice a radical element within this idea, and perhaps it's a dangerous idea. Perhaps it's not a good idea, but take it for what it is. But it's interesting to note, forget about the historical, Yoav Nun's more nuanced idea. Which one's about wandering, which one's about Israel? Notice the wandering one is the Sukkah. If we go back to Leviticus for a second, what did we say? We said, when you gather the land, then you take the lulav. Now clearly the lulav is more a land of Israel oriented. He says, this year, you're going to have Sukkot. You're in the desert. But when you gather the fruits of Israel, take lulav. So lulav is more of an Israel kind of a thing, and the other is not. The sukkah is more of a desert kind of an experience. So now, if you say that Sukkot is the main thing, that means that it's fundamentally, and that lulav is not, then you're saying it's fundamentally not a harvest festival. It's mostly a wandering in the desert thing. However, we must remember that, I think somehow it didn't make it into my sheet here, but we must remember that the Talmud says that that you know what, you know how you make a sukkah? Psola dagan v'yakin. You take the leftover stuff from the Beis HaMikdash, and with that, I'm sorry, you take the leftover stuff from your harvest that you don't need, like straw, and you throw it on top of the sukkah. So the rabbis interpret that the sukkah also represents the harvest, because you use the harvest to put on top of the sukkah. And Nehemiah said the same thing. The people in the time of Nehemiah took the harvest stuff and they made a sukkah with it. So there may be, again, a mixing together of these two things. Okay. The Sefer HaBatim, every week we've been looking at the Sefer HaBatim. My sons, Sharon and Tani, have introduced me to it. It's a book of the 613 mitzvot, and he explains each mitzvah. He says a lot to say about this, which, by the way, he thought it was a very appropriate season to have Sukkot. Other people thought Sukkot should have been to make a sukkah in the spring, not in the fall. But he thought it was a wonderful time to sit in your sukkah. I know it's too hot in the summer, so it's a good time to sit in your sukkah. But anyway, he says as follows. He says, the main idea of sukkah is to remember the bad times during the good times. You want to thank God more, you'll thank God more, and you'll be more humble. You remember the bad times. And you'll eat matzah and maror on Pesach to remember how bitter it was, and that you went out of your house to dwell in the Sukkot, and they were a difficult time in the desert. It was painful to remember how it used to be. Right? This is not the idea how wonderful it was in the desert. No, this is how miserable it was in the desert. And now God has brought us to live in homes that are decorated and a beautiful language and a beautiful land. And it's a nice fat land. It produces all kinds of fruits with the great kindness of God. So the Rabbi Luchavi believes that it's all about remembering the bad and how good things are now. So look at that. The lulav represents how good things are now, and the sukkah represents how bad things were then. It's very different than some people who say the sukkah represents the clouds of glory. And we were in the desert, it was wonderful. We had the clouds of glory and divine protection. We could feel the presence of God. Now, you know, maybe we don't feel it, so we have to try to feel it. But he says, no, no, no. Now you know how you feel God when you have a roof over your head. You know how you feel God. You have a beautiful painting on the wall. That's how you feel. You feel God. He said, God is doing good to me. I have a job. I make a living. That's the presence of God. But Nebuchadnezzar, the bad old days, when in those days we were in pain and suffering in the desert, oh, now we feel so much better. Now at least I have a roof over my head. Maybe I don't have a job. Maybe I don't have much money. But at least I have a roof over my head. It's not like the Jews in the desert where they had nothing. We were in much better shape. So lulav might represent how things are better today, and the like a harvest festival, almost like a first fruit that Shira mentioned, and the Sukkah represents how bad things used to be. So it's a very unique idea of the Sefer HaBat. And this idea of that the two things are not, it's not necessarily, you know, yin and yang, there's two completely different things, is represented by Nehemiah. Nehemiah is saying, look, this, you make a sukkah with these beautiful fruits. It's one, it goes together, and there's an opinion in its own that you use the harvest fruit and the special species that we mentioned, the lulav and etrog, you use that to make a sukkah. So don't get too carried away. By the way, if anybody wasn't able to buy a lulav or something, we have a few extra. We can help you with that. So just come over and contact me. I'll try to get you a lulav. But in any event, this is what I wanted to present. That what is it? Is it a holiday of lulav or a holiday of sukkah? And what's the difference? Well, we showed on the one end that it's very much a holiday of Sukkot. I mean, after all, it's known as the holiday of Sukkot. Lulav is sort of brought as sort of an afterthought. There are whole days of Sukkot where there isn't even supposed to be a lulav. We have a lulav to remember that in the temple they had a lulav. But most people who are not in Israel, not in Jerusalem, or not in the Beis Hamikdash, would have experienced that Sukkot is a 7-day holiday, and lulav is just for the first day. That's on the one end. On the other hand, we showed that the fundamental meaning of Sukkot might be the Chag HaAsif. The original meaning would be Chag HaAsif, and the holiday of gathering. Gathering, which one represents that? Is this tent that you go outside? Maybe. Maybe the sukkah represents the harvest, and you put stuff from the harvest on the top, like the Talmud says. Or maybe not. Maybe it's the lulav represents the harvest, and the sukkah represents the pre-harvest, the period before we lived in Israel, when we were Nebuch wandering around the desert and things weren't so great. So what difference does it make? Which one is the essential one? Very important difference. Is it fundamentally a Zecher Yetzias Mitzrayim holiday? Is it fundamentally a holiday to remember that we did wander and we went out of Egypt, an historical holiday? Or is it fundamentally a right here and now holiday, a holiday of remembering how we went out? Or according to Sefer HaBatim, the two together, to remember how bad things were then and how much better things are now, which is what the first fruit fellow says when he brings his first fruits. He says, we used to be wandering, and Abraham was wandering, and then we were in Egypt, it was terrible, and now I've come, I have a land, I have fruits, and I brought my first fruits. So that's what he says. It's the same thing. Pesach, Shavuot, and Sukkot, it's all about remembering bad and how now we have a harvest, thank God. So there's some kind of connection between these two, the lulav and the sukkah. They are connected as well. So I hope you enjoyed our discussion about what's the main thing, is a lulav or a sukkah.